The May 19th midterm election is less than a month away. Many candidates running for the state House, Senate, and congressional seats in Kentucky will be on the ballot. The question is who will you vote for? And what will be the factors that determine the candidates that would best represent you? Hi, I'm Richard Nelson here with the Commonwealth Matters, and we appreciate you joining us. Joining us on this edition is David Walls, the Executive Director of the Family Foundation. David, it's great to have you on the program.
Richard, good to be with you and grateful for all the great work that y'all do.
Yeah, thank you. Likewise, I know you have all really spent a lot of time in the state legislature lobbying for pro-life, pro-family bills. It has been, in my estimation, there have been a few good things and some disappointments, which is par for the course when it comes to the legislative session. But I wanted you to join us on the program in particular to talk about a couple things. One is, it's a rare thing for an organization to be called out on a legislative floor. And in this case, you were called out just a couple days ago on the state Senate floor. And I want to give you an opportunity to address what happened and your side, just to, I guess, clear the air and let the public know what's going on. I think that's a benefit for them. So that's one thing. But then in a broader sense, I wanted to have you join me on the program to talk about the things that you look for in good leadership, character qualities, the positions on the issues. What is it, from your perspective, that makes for a good leader, especially in our state legislature? So David, we'll start with the unusual floor speech where your name was brought up, the Family Foundation's name was brought up. This was brought to my attention immediately after it happened. It was the next day. But some of the previous things going on related to this were brought to my attention weeks ago. So on the Senate floor, on the very last day of the 2026 General Assembly session, Brandon Smith, a state senator from Hazard, brought up your name and the Family Foundation's name, which is unusual in itself. But he responded to a letter that you had sent him, because you had discovered probably the same time, or maybe, you know, around the same time that I did, that Brandon Smith had billboards and other publications indicating that the Family of Foundation of Kentucky endorsed his candidacy. So I'll let you take it from there. I guess, first of all, is that, just start from there. Was there an endorsement? And explain how you address candidates, especially around election time.
Yeah, Richard, and appreciate, again, just the opportunity to be on with you and talk a little bit about this situation. It was kind of an unusual and maybe perhaps confusing situation. But the reality is, look, the Family Foundation, we're a Christian public policy organization. Our main entity is a C3 organization. We're a 501c3 centric organization. We do education. We do advocacy. We do some lobbying at the state capitol and other activities. But we don't endorse candidates. We recognize, you know, elections are incredibly important, as you know, and some of the great work that CPC does on that front. But we simply don't endorse candidates. And so we advocate on our core issues, life, marriage, family, religious liberty. We do voter education and partner with and help put together voter guides to help educate Kentuckians to make a God-honoring decision, hopefully at the ballot box. And we do produce a legislative scorecard where we look at important key votes that legislators make after the legislative session, and we recognize legislators related to that. And so I think, you know, the situation with Senator Smith, look, he's been in the General Assembly for a number of years, has worked with our organization in the past, has supported issues that, you know, represent the values that we've supported in the past. But he's in a contested, you know, primary election and has an opponent. And we we simply got word that he was falsely claiming that the Family Foundation had endorsed his organization. There may have been some confusion on his part because we had recognized him as a Kentucky family champion for the first time related to our legislative scorecard in last session. But I had the opportunity previously to clarify this with him one-on-one and wanted him to just, you know kind of the information that we put out, whether it's our legislative scorecard, whether it's the voter guide that's just come out, that those aren't endorsements, and to just make sure in the communications that wasn't communicated in an inappropriate way. And then we found out, indeed, that it was being communicated as an endorsement explicitly. And like you said, I was kind of shocked to find out that there were, you know, billboards, other campaign materials, as well as on his website and in other forms of communication that I've come to find out. And so it really put us in a situation where we just wanted to, one, the truth to get out. We wanted to protect the integrity of our organization because, as Richard, as you can certainly appreciate, you know, we have a lot of enemies, I should say, of some of the values that we stand for. And there's certainly probably folks that would be looking for opportunities to go after our organizations. And so we simply just put out a very clear, very firm, but very necessary cease and desist letter to ask him to stop saying something that wasn't true, that we had endorsed his campaign. And so I think that is what led him to make the floor speech on the floor at the very end of the session.
David, one of the other concerns, and the reason why I was shocked, is first of all, I'm very familiar with how the Family Foundation engages during the session, but also with the scorecards. But never in the history of the Family Foundation has your organization endorsed a candidate. And here's the reason why, is because you're a 501c3 organization, which means that you're not allowed to. And there's that problem where it puts you not just in a tough spot and that you didn't endorse, but it could get you crossways with the IRS. I don't know if everybody understands or appreciates the distinction. You mentioned that you're a 501c3 centric organization. Commonwealth Policy Center is a 501c4 centric organization. And look, for the average listener, it looks like we're getting into the weeds, but from the IRS's perspective, this is important because a C3 organization is there to educate, inform, you have some lobbying capability, whereas a C4 organization can be political. Up to half of our budget can be politically oriented, where we can make endorsements, where we can have voter guides that are head-to-head and be a little more engaged politically. But when I first heard that you made this endorsement, I knew that something was up. And I wanted to give you every opportunity to explain to those who listen. And we do have listeners in that district. We have a radio station, and in fact, it's WDOC in Prestonsburg that carries this program weekly. And we shout out to them. We appreciate them carrying the Matters program. But I know that the listeners there would like clarity. And the voters throughout that district would like clarity as to what you've done. Bring us up to speed as to after that floor speech where really you were thrown under the bus. And I thought it was unfair, by the way. I'd tell that to Brandon Smith if he had joined me on the program. I think maybe he misunderstood and misinterpreted the family champion designation from last year as an endorsement. Even so, it does not justify it after he was told that this is not an endorsement. An endorsement is an endorsement. That is a term of art when it comes to politics. And having an award or a designation like you gave him, that's a different category. And it's unfortunate that he, at best, he misconstrued it. At the worst, it was something else, a misrepresentation. Tell us where you are right now.
Yeah, well, and I'll just add to that, Richard. You know, we immediately had a lot of supporters in Senate District 30, you know, that reached out to us and were just very confused by the situation. And so, you know, our hope and desire, again, in sending the essentially a cease and desist letter to Senator Smith was not to attack him or you know, really to intervene in the campaign in any way, but simply just to again, bring truth and clarity into the situation, you know, in fairness to the other candidate in the race, State Representative Bill Wesley, who also has been, you know, recognized repeatedly by us as a Kentucky family champion for his strong voting record as well. And again, at the end of the day, just wanting to have clarity in this, you know, there was some things that were said on the floor speech, some additional things that were just simply not true about our organization and not true, honestly, about some of the things that we published on voting records as it relates to Senator Smith. And so I encourage folks, you know, you can go to our website at KentuckyFamily.org and take a look at our legislative scorecard. We publish that to help provide, you know, our supporters and grassroots conservatives and Christians a deep dive into the legislative voting record of candidates so they can see where candidates have really stood on these important issues. And then also our voter guide that we've done in partnership with iVoter Guide that folks can visit at votekentucky.us. And you can see a comparison, not just of this race, of any of the contested primary races as well. But look, I'm thankful for all those that serve in the General Assembly. I want to give grace and recognize that, you know, it can be a tough job to work in the General Assembly and to serve and then also to have to be running a campaign. So I want to give some grace there. But at the end of the day, there were just some flat out false things that were said and some misrepresentations of the Family Foundation that we just feel the need to correct. And we want to continue to correct because we care about the truth. And at the end of the day, on May 19th, on primary election day, we want folks to go vote on factual, truthful information about which candidate best represents their values.
Hi, Richard Nelson here. At CPC, we believe that human dignity and our rights do not come from government, but these are gifts from God that must be protected in every generation. If you agree, may I ask you what you're doing to preserve freedom? Who's fighting for your values? If you're looking for somebody to be your voice with our government, somebody you can trust to promote conservative principles, then would you consider supporting us today? Truth is, we need your help. For $25 a month, you'll receive exclusive content, monthly and quarterly newsletters, special invitations to our events, and legislative and election insights. You can go to our website below to make a donation today. Together, we can leave our children a legacy of freedom and opportunity. So join us today.
Yeah, that's good. And that's a good segue, David, into the next question I wanted to ask you. You mentioned we've got a May 19th primary coming up about a month away. What are some of the ways that you process through how to look at a candidate, how from a Christian perspective, a Christian worldview analysis, how would you look at candidates who are on the ballot? Let's say there's a, regardless of the race, either some kind of legislative race, state house or state senate, what are some of the things that you look at? Of course, the issues I think are obvious, right? Where do they stand on fundamental issues? I think of like creational order issues, male and female, marriage. But what's your rubric, if you will, that you're looking at candidates who would bring about that Christian to the legislature, but also Christian worldview when they look at the issues? Can you expand on that?
Yeah, absolutely, Richard. And like you said, I mean, I do think we have to start with the issues and with the core issues. You know, where do they stand on the issues of family, God's design of the family, and marriage being an institution created by God as a union of a man and a woman and a husband and a wife. Obviously, the issue of life being so foundational to protect preborn image bearers, religious liberty, human sexuality, human dignity, standing up against harmful vices that seek to prey upon folks. You know, those are all incredibly important. But when you get further from that, you know, you've got to look to issues of character, issues of leadership. And really, we're in a moment in time where some of the battles, you mentioned creational order. I mean, it really is amazing. And I know you appreciate this, Richard. So many of the issues of the day that are being debated in our culture are Genesis 1 issues. They are foundational issues. And so when we're talking about, you know, our government officials being faced with life or death decisions, when it's the issue of life, a foundational creational order issues, we are also looking for candidates that are willing to be bold and unapologetic in standing for the truth and saying, look, you know, in the Commonwealth of Kentucky, we've been blessed to have legislative majorities, you know, that have, you know, a strong pro-life caucus, for example, that takes up a significant portion of both the caucuses in both houses. How are we going to advance these issues in meaningful ways? You know, my heart and desire is to see Kentucky, and I think we have been in some ways, but really be a leading pro-family state that is helping lead the nation, because I firmly believe that we lead the nation by states and local governments taking the first step. And this nation is designed to be from the ground up, not from the top bottom. So we're looking for candidates. And I think, you know, for Christians, we would encourage folks to look at candidates who are strong on the issues, who are bold in their personal faith, and they're looking to go advocate and stand strongly for their values, recognizing they're going to have opposition.
Yeah, David, that's good. I would say I'll add to that about character. Character is so important for our elected officials. It takes a special kind of person to be able to put themselves out there, to take the heat, whether they're running for office, to think on their feet, to be grounded in their values, and then to move forward. They get a lot of criticism, a lot of attacks, but character is so important. I've heard it said before that character is destiny. And unpacking that a little bit, or peeling off the layers of that onion, if you have somebody of solid character, when they're going through the battle, when they are taking heat, being criticized, they tend to stand firm if they are people of character and integrity. But if they go in wobbly, if their character is uncertain, then they're likely to melt in the midst of battle. So character is destiny. I've heard it said before distinguishing between reputation and character, that reputation is who people think you are, and character is who you are when nobody's looking, right? Is that person all by themselves, and what are they dwelling on? How do they spend their time? And that's really the core of a person. And sometimes it can really be difficult to discern who, in distinguishing between the reputation and the character, but character does come through, especially in the difficult times, of battle and of trying. And I think you and I are in agreement that we would all be served well. It's not just conservative Christians, but all of Kentucky, regardless of their political stripe, is served well when we have people of character representing us in all levels of government. Would you agree?
Absolutely. And, you know, Richard, I failed to mention one, and I think what you said kind of segues into this. And, you know, to lead is to serve. We have the example from Christ himself, obviously, perfectly. But, you know, so many times I feel like just in the political sphere, you know, in Frankfurt, you know, there can be a temptation for folks to forget that ultimately you are serving the people in your district. You know, we want to see elected officials and candidates that are ultimately seeking to serve the Lord. But so many times I think folks forget that, and we can see instances where folks are looking to serve other things, other interests, you know, themselves, obviously, is a big temptation. And so looking for folks who humbly are looking to serve and have a heart of service, I think is, you know, something incredibly important to look for as we head to the ballot box here in just over a month.
David, I want to press into that a bit. Politicians or political candidates are often criticized for being self-serving, being motivated by the wrong things, right? The wrong things are motivating them to get into office. And you know, and many of the listeners know, that we do candidate training events across the state. And one of the things I give in my talk at the beginning of these sessions is that, you know, somebody who steps out there and puts their name on the ballot has the potential for a lot of bad things to happen. And it's because there are three things that converge in a politician's life or in a candidate's life that in any one degree, any one of these things could destroy a person. And here's what it is. It is money. It is power, and it's fame. Those three things converge in a political person's life, and anyone, again, in high degrees can destroy a person. And it takes a person of strong character to resist the temptations. Like, here's the reality, though. If you're going to run for office, it does take resources to fund a campaign. it is going to take a media presence. You're going to get in front of a camera or in front of a microphone, and you got to make your case to the voters. So there's that level of fame. But then there's power. When somebody gets elected, they are in a seat of power. And this is something you cannot appreciate until you've been in that seat. When people are vying for your attention, when they're asking you to do something, and then you realize, oh my goodness, I've got some real power here. I can control the budget, or I can direct this spending over to this area. You do have power. And from a Christian worldview perspective, we know that we should guard ourselves from any one of those things. But I want to pick up where you just took off, or where I took off from you. And that's that if you have a servant heart, if you have a servant's perspective going into that office, if you were to win your particular race, you're in a better place. You're in a safe place. And I think for Christians, it's important for us to recognize that. It's important for us to both recognize the pitfalls and the dangers of being in the political realm, but also to recognize the good that can come about when Christians are truly motivated by the right thing, when they actually do the right thing once they get into office. And I think all of us benefit from that. Even those non-Christians who may not appreciate the values or perspective, there's a sense of fairness and justice and integrity that a mature Christian would bring to that office.
Yeah, I agree with that wholeheartedly. You know, I hope that's the mindset that Christians and all Kentuckians take into mind as we prepare for a very important primary election. You know, I like to remind folks, Richard, I know you know this, but the reality is only about half of registered Christians show up to vote in any given election, and that's probably even half of half in a primary election. But the reality is primary elections are often the most important election in determining who's going to represent you. A lot of these legislative districts are very clearly, you know, just based on previous elections, a pretty safe Republican district or a pretty safe Democrat district. And so many times, if you want to have a say in who's going to represent you in Frankfort, and obviously we've got some big federal races on the ballot this primary election cycle as well, you need to be informed and get out and vote on May 19th. And so, our hope and prayer, as we're now out of the legislative session, got a number of things that we're working on, but a big one is just to do all that we can to ensure that folks across Kentucky are equipped to get out and cast an informed vote on May 19th.
David, to your point about getting out and voting in the primaries, the turnout is typically low. However, a large number of primaries are, or a large number of elections are determined in the primaries. We've got a number of Republicans who have primary challenges, but there's no general election challenge. It used to be the opposite in Kentucky 20, 25, 30 years ago. It was Democrats who controlled state politics for the most part, and their elections were determined in the primaries. Typically low voter turnout. I don't know what Secretary of State Adams is projecting for this primary season. You know, I would, in the past, it's been, you know, anywhere from 20 to 40% in a midterm primary, somewhere in that range. It's even lower in constitutional office election years. I think it was a few years ago, we had around 20% for the Republican primary for governor. So very, very low. But is this something you're encouraging people to get registered to vote? Registration, by the way, to vote, you can still register to vote in the May 19th primary. It's April the 20th. Still time to register. Are you doing anything in particular to encourage people to register?
Yeah, we encourage folks to get registered to vote, and we've got some additional election resources in addition to access to the voter guide at votekentucky.us. We've got some new election resources as well. Richard, as you're probably aware, there's some really really important and needed updated guidance that actually came to the IRS last year, or maybe before the 2024 election, that kind of clarified some things that I think hopefully will help churches and pastors be more on solid ground and understanding that as the Lord leads them, they can educate their folks on where candidates stand, encourage their congregations to use the voter's guide from our organizations and others, and to take advantage of the God-given rights that we're still blessed to have in this country, in this Commonwealth, and to use those to get out and support candidates that honor the Lord.
Very good. Of course, and I appreciate your efforts to educate the voters and then to encourage Christians to register to vote. We CPC has some election resources as well on our website. It's going to be made available this weekend. David, the primaries are coming up May the 19th. You've been encouraging Christians to vote and pastors to educate their congregations. I want to end on that particular note. We've got just a couple minutes. And by the way, I appreciate your time. I told you it'd be a short program. Yeah. You've gone almost a half hour, so I appreciate you indulging me.
Good conversation.
But tell us what, you know, a large part of the Family Foundation's work is to help Christians to understand the issues, but then to engage. You work closely with churches across the state. What would you tell a pastor who might be afraid to put out information or to talk about an election? You know, I think we live in a highly partisan, divisive, a lot of stuff going on that would just make it easier for a pastor to say, I just don't want to do this. What would you say to a pastor who is reluctant on maybe educating their congregation on some of the issues?
Yeah, well, one thing I would say is the folks in your congregation probably are desiring you to help equip them. That's one of the interesting things. Even Dr. George Barna, some of his, you know, research that he's done on trends on these things have indicated that there's a lot of desire in the church among Christians to get equipped on Christian worldview issues, and particularly the intersection of how these issues intersect in the political realm. But you know, for specifically to a pastor, first, I encourage them to pray, to seek clarity from God's word on the issues and candidates. You know, equipping your congregation when elections come around, providing them resources is a simple act of discipleship that you can do. Again, when we're talking about potential issues of life and marriage and religious freedom and some of the, you know, such important issues that are being dealt with in Frankfort and D.C., just incredibly important. Speak clearly, you know, as to if you're speaking on the political candidate, you know, Scripture is our guidance. Do they align with biblical values? Do they not align with biblical values? And then, you know, that's what we're here to do. Partner with organizations like the Family Foundation, like CPC, that can be trusted to try to provide you helpful resources. Ultimately, we would encourage them to follow the Lord in this. But I think with the amount of freedoms that we have, we're approaching the 250th anniversary of our great nation. Our nation would not be the nation that it is today had it not been from men of God in the pulpit who time and time again spoke up into the issues of the day. And so we would encourage folks, and particularly our pastors and church leaders, continue to do that.
Very good. David, that's a good word to end on. Again, appreciate your time. Great conversation. Keep up the good work, and may God bless you.
Thanks.